You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and with the primary election in Iowa just days ahead, Democratic voters will be making an important choice among three candidates and who will face longtime incumbent Senator Chuck Grassley this November. With the U.S. Senate split 50-50, this race takes on national importance as both parties look for all opportunities to win precious seats. My guest today is one of those Democrats running for the U.S. Senate. He's Glenn Hurst. He's a doctor from Pottawatomie County in western Iowa. And Glenn, I really appreciate you taking the time in these last days of the campaign to share your thoughts on your candidacy with our listeners.
Hey, it's my pleasure. I want to give everybody an opportunity to hear about our campaign and where I think we can take this nation.
Well, that's my first question. You've got an interesting background. Why did you choose to run for the U.S. Senate this year?
We do certainly come from a position that I think is unique lately in politics. I think it's actually the best position to be coming from, though. I'm running for the U.S. Senate because I want to see Iowa thrive. But the way I got here was not because I felt I'm the right person to do the job and I'm going to put myself out there and get people to support me. I've had people supporting me through grassroots movements, for the last, 5-10 years, as we, address the climate crisis and as we address the unions losing their ability to bargain, our public sector unions, and through climate issues with the Sierra Club. So, I kind of grew out of a movement, and I'm not here to build a coalition. I'm here because of my coalition. So I think that's probably the best place for candidates to be coming from. And then, of course, my healthcare background. I see things like Medicare for All as the primary option to address the healthcare crisis in this nation. So it's just the natural fit for me to be the particular candidate coming out of our groups.
Well, when you started out, I'm sure you thought the issues you'd be talking about are different from what they are now, and events have a way of overtaking things. But starting off just with inflation seems to be on most people's minds. I think the Federal Reserve was kind of hoping, and of course our policymakers were hoping it would be short term. It doesn't appear that it's going to be. What are you seeing as the things that the federal government can be doing to help ease that and ease up the stress on folks' pocketbooks?
Well, we have to see that inflation is actually being muddled, the inflation picture, by profiteering that is going on at the the corporate level. Those big corporations like Procter & Gamble and Verizon, Coca-Cola, these companies are posting record profits during this inflation period when they should be, trying to retain loyal customers. Well, they don't have to because they're the only show in town. So I think looking at antitrust is one way we're going to have to address kind of this price gouging problem. But the inflation specific portion, we have an opportunity to become an energy independent nation. I don't believe we're going to see Russian oil production come back to the way it was. We're not going to see the benefit at the gas pump, no matter what we do to address inflation. So I think we need to be focusing our nation on how do we become 100% energy independent, clean energy independent. And that's going to be, a huge benefit in so many different ways. Part of that is just, you aren't going to pay those prices at the pump because you're not going to be at the pump. But we're also going to see investments in federal jobs program through the Green New Deal that would you know, address housing issues and infrastructure issues in our communities. So I think we've got to look at it as a long-term problem that we want to address, not just how do you dump more product into the economy.
What are your thoughts on nuclear energy? I mean, I hear a lot of folks give different views of this, and that it is a source of clean energy. It's certainly cleaner than fossil fuels, but of course there's controversy over nuclear energy. Does that fit into your kind of what you're thinking short or long term as far as energy solutions?
So I think there's a lot easier routes to go than towards nuclear energy. The easiest route right now is to take advantage of solar and wind. We already have the infrastructure in place to make those things happen, geothermal as well. The risk with nuclear energy and the long-term effects of, the byproducts of nuclear energy, the short lifespan of nuclear plants, certainly are things that we can try to address down the road, but, we're already talking about an inflationary period that's putting a strain on people. I don't think this is the time to reach for those types of pies in the sky. This is the time to address those things that really could make Iowa uniquely an energy independent state. We're a great part of the nation in terms of harnessing a consistent wind source. We obviously have lots of open land with lots of exposure north, south, east, and west for benefiting from solar energy and directing those panels towards the sun. I just think that makes far more sense, and it's far more environmentally safe in the long run.
There was good news and bad news on population in Iowa. The good news is the state gained population over the last 10 years. The bad news is many counties in the rural areas lost population. It really seems to rural areas across the whole Midwest, I think. I live in a rural county, just need something, some type of revitalization. What are your thoughts on what the federal government could do, what you'd be advocating to kind of help rural areas get a jolt where they can start? It's like a chicken and egg, population and jobs, which comes first. But how would you go about trying to help rural areas?
Well, I think we need the chicken and the egg at the same time. I believe that the Medicare for All Act is could aptly be renamed as the Rural Revitalization Act. And here's why. Along with providing health coverage for 85 million Americans who are uninsured and underinsured, it bolsters the health infrastructure in our nation. So, we've had a 25% population loss in our rural counties over the last 40 years here in Iowa. And when you lose population, then you lose services. And when you lose services, you can't attract more population, and then you lose more services, and it's this vicious cycle. So by shoring up our hospitals, taking those 40 hospitals that are at high risk for closure and putting them back to full-time hospitals, hospitals that deliver babies again, hospitals that require a high-speed internet infrastructure, that gives our communities kind of this anchor of jobs, right? These are good-paying jobs in the healthcare industry. These are long-term jobs. People stay in these places long-term. This is where people come and start a family, move to our communities. So it would be a great tool for getting our jobs and attracting people to those jobs and injecting money into our economy. And, when we run that broadband to those rural hospitals, now we have a place to kind of peel it off to the other industries that might need it. Like when I got my took my car to the service station the last time, I didn't get a tune-up. I got a software upgrade, and that's the nature of cars now. Now, if your community's mechanic can't do a software upgrade on your car, well, then you're going to be taking your car into the city. And when you go into the city, then you're going to buy some groceries there a little less, and you're going to fill up your tank for a little bit less. we've got to encourage industry in our communities with some of that infrastructure as well. So I think that's just the ideal place to run it.
There was an attempt for pass, as you know, the Build Back Better plan, which went down because of, I talked in the introduction about a 50-50 split. So there's not much room for error in trying to get the very diverse Democratic Party around a set of ideas. What are your thoughts on that? Should they try to bring this back in maybe slimmed down form to get some of the votes of the people that were hesitant before? And if they should, what element should be involved?
So I supported Build Back Better when it was in the, you know, $12 million or $12 trillion range, not the $1.7 trillion range. You know, and it's not that I didn't support the $1.7 trillion. I just felt like the bigger investment is what we needed. And we certainly don't need people going to Washington, D.C. at this time that are going to want to trim it back even farther. You know, we've got, you know, my two competitors, I look at us, and I think the easiest way for people to wrap their heads around, you know, what type of thinker and what type of actor are these people? We've got a Kyrsten Sinema type candidate. We got a Joe Manchin candidate. And then we have myself, which is more of the Tom Harkin-like candidate that's going to support progressive ideals. You know, Harkin delivered the Americans with Disabilities Act. That was a huge investment in the people of this nation, but it was the right thing to do. I believe that Build Back Better was a huge investment, including things like the child tax credit, which is incredibly important. Popular across Iowa and the United States. It included key components of the Medicare for All Act. It addressed tax credits for energy efficiency. I mean, it was just full of great legislation. And we really have, you know, two candidates here in Iowa who have said that's not really what I would support. And then you've got me saying, you know, I support the Medicare for All Act. I support the Green New Deal. I support common sense immigration change. And I just am not seeing that from the rest. So, yes, I would want to see things come back and build back better. And, yes, we need to get them passed, but it's not by trimming it back to appease everybody. It's by getting the right people to Washington, D.C. to get it done.
There are those who say a bigger package would bring about more inflation. That was one of Senator Manchin's concerns, is that with inflation taking off now and some people blaming some of the previous packages that were passed on COVID relief, et cetera. Is there a concern that passing something along the lines you've talked about, the bigger version of Build Back Better, might stoke more inflationary problems in the economy?
No, because it's an investment in the economy. You know, part of Build Back Better and Green New Deal involve a federal jobs program, and making sure that every American has a paycheck and has you know, money to put into the system should be driving you know, the supply getting in place. You know, we don't need to build more trucks and hire more truckers to get supply out there. We need to put people to work with the supply that we've got, and with the needs we've got. To become energy independent by 2030, I mean, we're going to have, that's less than 8 years. We've got solar panels that need to be, you know, put in place. We've got rural infrastructure and rural homes that are inadequate and unsafe for living. We've got to invest in people shoring up all of those pieces and getting us in place for energy efficiency. And no, I don't see that as a problem with inflation, especially when we attack the antitrust legislation with the vigor that we did back in the 70s, and get those corporations that are profiteering off of American fear. You know, we break that up and get people reasonable products at reasonable prices again.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Public Radio in the Quad Cities. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is Glenn Hurst, Dr. Glenn Hurst, who's one of three Democratic candidates running for the U.S. Senate in Iowa, the opportunity to take on Chuck Grassley. That election is the first Tuesday in June. It's coming right up, folks. If you're going to be voting on the Democratic side, you got three choices. This is one of them. So we've got Glenn offering some of his ideas here for folks. If you're still undecided, this is a great opportunity to listen to Glenn and make his case for gaining your vote. We've been talking about some domestic issues, and I'm going to I want to get back to something I picked out in your background that's particularly dear to me that I've got to ask about, and that is that you were on a small town city council, and I served on a small town city council, and partisan politics doesn't hit those local governments as much. You've got to come together and work together to get things done. There aren't Democratic or Republican potholes. And I think that's an interesting thing about your background. Does that give you kind of a mindset on how you would handle, if you're elected senator from Iowa, how you would handle getting along with the other party? What's your philosophy generally on trying to get things done, cooperation versus staying true to your principles?
So I tell people I don't believe in compromise, but I do believe in consensus. Okay, compromise is where we all lose a little something to get something done. In consensus, we find opportunities for every side to win. And when you're looking at a problem from that perspective, people begin to cooperate more. People begin to listen to one another and hear the points that maybe they couldn't hear if they were stuck in kind of a partisan, we've got to get this for our side. Our little town of 600 people, within the first year of it being announced, we made Juneteenth a holiday in our for our city employees, because it was just the right thing to do, to embrace the national policy. But boy, you sure see a Republican Democrat divide on a lot of those issues that might even look like civil rights. But boy, we were able to just do the right thing in our community, no matter how it was labeled. And I'm really proud to have led that charge. I think coming from a rural Iowa city council is another ideal place for a candidate to be running from. We implement federal policy at the local level on a daily basis, and I think that type of skill set is really useful as we get to Washington, D.C. and talk about what policies do we want to implement. You need a person who understands, there's too many roadblocks in there to get that done at the local level, or local people could use that and it's useful. I appreciate that you saw that, because I think those are the types of people that really should be running up for higher office.
The next issue I want to address is one that has both domestic and foreign implications, and that's globalization. With what we've seen with COVID and the fact that now there's an effort to bring back manufacturing capacity to the United States because of extended supply chains, et cetera. Talk generally, if you would, Glenn, about where are we at in globalization? Is it dead? Do we have to just scale it back and still alive? And how, like Iowa is such a big agricultural exporting state, how do we balance that with also the fact that globalization, no question, had some bad impacts on manufacturing, causing a lot of factories to leave, shut down and go overseas? How do we balance that, and where are we at in globalization?
Well, I think we've been abandoning some of the precepts of our role in a global economy and a global social structure, and that's why we have these kind of problems. Globalization, I guess, take that back to FDR, right? FDR gave the Four Freedoms speech, ironically, on January 6th of 1941, 80 years before the insurrection, and his speech was all about how we interact globally and the direction of not just our nation, but of our planet, whereas Trump's speech was all about, getting everything for himself. So it was really a different direction. But in the Four Freedoms speech, FDR talks about the freedom of speech and the freedom of religion, to practice religion, that those should be universal rights across the planet. And then he talked about freedom from want, which is about, every individual on this planet should, know that they have sufficient food, sufficient shelter, and the ability to lead their lives without threat. And that's the last one, freedom from fear. And freedom from fear, really, when he detailed it, was about demilitarization of the world, so that no country should live in threat that another country is going to militarily move in and try to overtake them, like we're seeing happen right now in the Ukraine. And we've backed away from those principles, but those are the principles that the Atlantic Treaty and NATO were built on. The Declaration of Human Rights, which is part of the UN Charter, are based on that Four Freedoms speech. So, as a country, we've really allowed ourselves to move away from that. Nuclear proliferation still going on. The risks of our involvement in things like Nicaragua back in the Reagan era. I mean, every time we try to dip in selfishly, everything kind of crumbles. So I think we need to take a perspective of how do we lead this world in addressing those four freedoms, especially freedom from fear and freedom from want.
Well, one example, I think, like in our relationship with China, I mean, we obviously have a very delicate but important relationship with China, and it plays right into the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, which was proposed years back. The Trump administration walked away. Biden hasn't really taken a role on that. A lot of labor unions oppose this, but a lot of farmers are in favor of it. How would you come down on an issue like that, as far as, again, within this wide gamut of globalization, how our place in the world, especially versus competitors like China?
Yeah, it's okay to have an import-export deficit with China. I mean, there are things that we don't need to be importing. It doesn't have to be an equal balance of you send us this much, we send you that much. And so I think that's important for the people to kind of get their heads around that the trade imbalance is not necessarily a negative thing. But what we want is we want to know that when we're trading with a partner country, that we respect things like intellectual property rights. We respect the value of labor and the laborers, and that we see that those people are treated fairly. Again, that's part of that freedom from want for those individuals. And we stand up for that with some of our trade agreements. And I agree. I think the Trans-Pacific, kind of along the lines of NAFTA, probably wasn't the greatest piece of diplomacy out there, and I'm happy to say that I honestly, you asked about kind of working across the aisle and bipartisanship earlier. Bipartisanship can sometimes really fail us when we're compromising, when we're all losing, and that's how we got NAFTA, and that's how we got the Patriot Act, and that's how we actually got into the Afghan War, So bipartisanship's a thing to be careful about, just for the sake of being bipartisan. So, I think our relationship with China really, we've got to address that intellectual rights piece. And we have to recognize that, as leaders and the largest producers in the world, China and the U.S. of most goods, we're going to carry a big portion of that burden of climate care and addressing the climate crisis. And I think that's the kind of things we should be negotiating with them as we go forward in discussing trade and the global economy.
Before I ask my final question, I'd like to share the website for Glenn Hurst's campaign. It's hurstforiowa.com, H-U-R-S-T. That's all one word, if you're interested in learning more information. My final question, I ask this of all candidates. This is your chance to make a closing argument, so to speak. I've got about two and a half minutes here. What do you feel gives your competitive edge over your rivals here for the Democratic nomination for U.S. Senate?
Well, the competitive edge is that we're a people-driven campaign. We're not a campaign of big dollars, and again, we're talking about the primary here. The big dollars will come when we come to run against Chuck Grassley. What we want to have right now is what makes us competitive against other Democrats is that this campaign is grown out of people. It's grown out of political action groups. It's grown out of folks who have been on the front line for health care and for the climate and for seniors and for people with disabilities. It's been on the front line for the LGBTQI community and for educators and laborers. And to have a candidate that grew out of that is really unique. But it's also the advantage because there's just no amount of commercial time that you're going to buy that makes that realistic. So I tell people it's very the most important thing is knowing where you stand. If you stand for the Green New Deal, then you found your candidate. If you stand for Medicare for All, you found your candidate. If you stand for reparations, you found your candidate. If you stand for student loan repayment, you found your candidate. There's just no other candidate out there that's willing to do that, as well as address the filibuster immediately and to go to Washington unbeholden to anyone. So I think that's our advantage, is that we really come from a place of very clear values and clear goals.
Dr. Glenn Hurst has been my guest today on Heartland Politics. He's running for the U.S. Senate. Against two other challengers. That election, primary election, is Tuesday, June 7th in Iowa. Make sure, if you're Democrat, independent, whatever, get out and vote. It's important to vote, participate either way. Glenn, thank you so much for being our guest today, and stay safe as you round out the campaign in a very busy primary season.
I appreciate that. You too.
Heartland Politics is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. If you enjoyed this conversation, you can hear more on the Heartland Politics podcast, available at WVIK.org, in the WVIK app, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.